I'm used to hearing about money for like psychological and neuroscience research, but you guys are the philosophers. You never really hear that much about the big bucks going to philosophy researchers.
Yeah. I'm really wondering what a department philosophy department does with $4 million.
Well, they have to pay all of their students who graduated with philosophy degrees and can't get jobs.
Well, that would be nice.
Gold-plated armchairs.
Well, and they have to build that actual ivory tower, so that's expensive.
Wow.
That too, I guess.
Yeah.
Alfred Mele from Florida State University. His department's going to get $4 million for a research project on the nature of free will. Mm. Who's giving them this money?
It's relevant.
Oh, I think it's pretty obvious who would be given.
Yeah.
The Templeton Foundation, which is very –
That was my first guess. I'm getting so good at this, you guys.
Which is I don't know. What would you call it? It's a
religious nonprofit.
Yeah, they're always funding things, about the intersection of science and religion. And so you'll see their stamp on a lot of philosophical conferences that deal with those issues.
We've talked about them plenty of times before.
Right.
On the show, a lot of that stuff with Justin Barrett's research, hasn't that been?
Correct. I think he's involved.
They do fund some very good stuff and stuff that we've given props to previously on the show.
And some pretty horrible stuff, too. I think what bothers me more about the Templeton Foundation than the fact that they have an agenda is that they have so much money behind it. They can take somebody that's obscure or a research area that's obscure and almost overnight propel it into the mainstream.
Well, you can read critiques too. I think Daniel Dennett, the philosopher, has criticized Mele and some of these people for taking Templeton money.
If I read the articles correctly, it's not even the John Templeton Foundation. It is specifically the theological wing of the John Templeton Foundation.
There's a name and an acronym for the project, Big Questions.
It's called the Big Questions in Free Will Project, and it is funding 8 2-year science projects at an average cost of $340,000 each.
I need to come up with something like this.
It's a lot of dough. Listeners of our show will know that we've talked before on the show about the free will determinism issue ad nauseum. We've devoted multiple episodes to it. Why are people interested and why am I so interested? And I think it is – here's the thing, the way I conceptualize it to justify my interest in that. If we're going to be more than just anti-religion, there are things that are building blocks that underlie not only religion but a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. So woo-woo type stuff. Things were meant to be type pseudo superstitious things, and free will is one of those things. It's not when you're determinist, you're not specifically anti-religion, but it's one of those things along with dualism and teleology and that sort of thing that forms a building block of a lot of religion, but also a lot of quasi-religious matters, and brain versus soul concepts, that sort of
stuff. It can be at the root of a lot of judgments that I think are destructive in our society. I think one, the bootstrapping mentality. All people are created equal, and if somebody is disenfranchised, it's their own fault because they're lazy or they're criminal or something else like that.
Yeah, and I think religions have correctly latched onto it because they know that determinism is a threat. They're right about that. Yeah. It is a threat to things like heaven and hell and afterlife responsibility and that sort of stuff.
Just world belief would be another one that I think has free will components underneath.
Yeah, just this notion that everybody's a self-made person and that you're really in some deep way really ultimately responsible for the situation that you're in.
And for people who are listening to the show right now and you're new to the show, you haven't heard our free will series and you're wondering, wait a second, are the Doubtcasters actually saying we don't have any control over our own actions and there's no such thing as right or wrong or any of this stuff? Don't worry. The ridiculously short version is we basically on this show have always argued that everything we do is caused, that human beings are physical, biological systems, that we're bound to the exact same laws of cause and effect that run the rest of the universe. Mm-hmm. And so that means that every single action we make has physical and psychological antecedents to them that can be fully explained in terms of causality, or at least ideally could be fully explained.
Right.
Yeah. We're not saying that people don't make volitional actions. We're not saying that winks and blinks are the same thing. But we are saying that no one has the power of God to create their choices ex nihilo.
Right. And God doesn't have that power either.
And we're also saying that being determined is different than being predetermined.
Yes, that's another huge part of it. We don't defend fatalism or any idea that your destiny has been set before the beginning of time. We're just talking about everything is part of a large causal framework.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think the part of the moral benefits too is it tends to make us a little more humble, and it tells us that when we confront difficult social or behavioral problems in people, we should look for the underlying cause and try to address that rather than judge them or put them into prisons and that sort of thing.
Yeah, we're way more humble and less judgmental than those assholes who think differently than we do.
So much.
Put them into prisons for – and here's one of the distinctions that we're going to talk about today is put them in prisons for retributive reasons versus other reasons that are like protecting society.
Yeah, we're not against prisons.
We're not against like locking people up. I'm sorry.
I had a vision of Batman where we just let everybody out and really, Gotham is yours now.
Dude, take control of your city.
That's good.
That was really good.
That's relevant to one of the impetuses for the material that we're going to talk about today is that Alfred Melle, the philosopher from FSU, is coming to our fair city and the Grand Valley State University next year. There's like book club in the philosophy department to prep for that because he's written some books on topics. His topic this time is, does neuroscience show that we are not free? And so you can look this up on YouTube and some of his other papers of things where he takes issue with neuroscience studies that the authors of those studies have suggested support determinism.
Mm-hmm.
Things like the LeBay study, where back in the 80s there was a study where people's were told to make a motion with their hands and watch a clock and then report when they made the conscious intention to move, and there was a gap there where the person's decision was already in action by the time that they reported it, you know, leading to what LeBay suggested was is that there was the conscious aspect of things was an afterthought or an epiphenomena. Melle takes issue with studies like that where you can see he goes on for, you know, 15, 20 minutes in his talks about dismantling that study, which does have flaws. It wasn't really an experimental study. They didn't like manipulate anything. It was
LeBay is not the best experiment to prove determinism, but it's an interesting starting point to talk about the discussion.
And that's one of the things that irritated me enough to want to talk about this stuff is straw man type things.
Yep.
There's a lot of neuroscience since then that does manipulate variables with things like magnetic stimulation of the cortex. Unbeknownst to the subject, you zap their cortex with a little magnets through their skull. And
there is a radio lab about this homemade thing. You can get all the stuff at Radio Shack your brain, and they use it for like assassin training
It's kind of chilling to me as an academic because it makes people –
You can build it.
They had the reporter talks about this where you play like a shooting game.
Yeah.
And they stimulate the cortex and it sort of focuses the people so that they can crowd out stuff and just pick targets off one by one without all the crazy thoughts of panicking or things like that, which is a little disturbing, creating automatons.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We've also mentioned on the show there's some uses for temporarily disabling centers of the brain. Mm-hmm. So like a really good TED Talk is by Rebecca Sachs from MIT where she talks about the moral centers of the brain being temporarily knocked out and it impairs your judgment between responsibility of right and wrong.
We talked about a study on the show where you could turn somebody from a deontologist to a consequentialist just by knocking out one portion of the brain.
The temporal parietal junction of the brain is involved with making decisions about attributions for responsibility.
Right,
you could have known otherwise versus, you know, it's not your fault, that sort of thing, and which clearly affects, in this case, moral judgments of whether that person is responsible.
Now, people might respond by saying, oh, this is no evidence against free will because we are experimentally manipulating a brain. This is not how a brain properly functions. But I think the response is, well, you know, that's under experimentation, under the manipulation, but people have differences in their brain. If there's some area in your prefrontal cortex that's really important in restraining your behavior, and when you knock that out, you see weird behaviors happen. Well, there are some people who are just naturally going to have that underdeveloped in them or maybe overdeveloped.
Mm-hmm. That's what the Rebecca Sachs study shows, that as kids develop and mature in this center of the brain, they start to develop the distinguishing ability of responsible versus not responsible. And adults who vary in this activity center of the brain, they also – it correlates with their judgments of responsibility or not. In other words, if you have an underdeveloped, janky area that's not active, you are – you show that like lack of ability to discriminate. Well, he couldn't have known, so I shouldn't blame him.
Hey, and nobody chooses to be born with an underdeveloped prefrontal cortex.
Speaking of differences in brains, a guy that we talk about several times on the show, the Texas shooter
Charles Whitman.
Charles Whitman. You know, his brain was recently stolen.
Yeah,
it was amongst 100 brains that were that disappeared from I think a college where they were being housed. So.
Zombie apocalypse.
Yes.
And he had a tumor right pushing down on his amygdala,
and it caused him to become a very different person, in almost self aware that he had changed. We talked about him plenty.
Previously. I read for my philosophy class when we talk about this. I read quotes from Charles Whitman's suicide letter, which includes things like, "I don't know what's going on. Yeah. Can somebody donate my money to a mental health foundation?"
Yep.
Well, that leads to some of these things with neuroscience too. That's also devastating arguments against free will. It's not just the manipulation, but the people's conscious experience. It's not as if they're like, "Oh, you just zapped my brain, therefore I will do that, can't resist urge." They confabulate a reason. They don't know what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Their conscious report is, "I chose to do that," when in fact they didn't chose to do it. There's other studies that are better than this Libet study where the people's decision to move this or that hand are created by the experimenter, by stimulating the cortex, move right hand, move left hand. But yet the people don't report like, "Oh, zap, I must move right hand."
Right.
They said, "Oh, I just I wanted to move my right hand."
Yeah.
I think, Luke, you did a pretty good job in some of our previous episodes talking about how, you know, we don't have to go to neuroscience. The social psychology does quite well. If social psychology studies on priming effects and self-deception and confabulation and all these other phenomena, if they are consistently showing that we are not even consciously aware of many of the things that go into our cognitions and our decisions, how can we say that we make rational decisions that we are fully responsible for if we don't even know 80% of what's been going on underneath?
I don't think we need to even have modern science to know that there was something terribly wrong with the dualist story.
Yeah.
You know, well, I mean, that's
– It helps. I mean, it bolsters the case.
It definitely bolsters
the
case, yeah.
Well, see, the other thing that irritated me specifically about some of Melle's arguments were that one of his arguments is not based upon the science of whether determinism or free will exists, but the consequences of having free will or not. Or
yeah, I noticed that right away.
I find this with creationism too. You always know you're sort of like the argument's going to take a turn for the better for you when somebody starts arguing of, well, if it was true that we evolved, we wouldn't have moral responsibility. And this is what was shocking about his stuff, because he's a sophisticated guy, but he likes to talk about the public is being misinformed about determinism, neural determinism, and therefore it's going to make them more immoral. Because there are some studies out there showing that when you cause people to believe in determinism or challenge their free will beliefs, there's some studies out that show that people like steal things or they become more willing to cheat. The rationale being that it erodes their sense of moral responsibility.
Don't let them know about it and everyone will behave.
Yeah,
okay?
So that's kind of an odd argument against determinism in favor of free will, is to say, well, if it is true that we're determined, don't tell people because they're going to be immoral.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
okay. We also have information from some of these same research groups that it makes you more immoral to be a determinist, showing that there is another side of it. So there's been recently some studies that have come out about free will beliefs and the tendency to be retributive or vindictive in your punishment. When you cause people to believe more in free will, those people become more punitive. Essentially, they become hard-ass on what they perceive as moral transgression.
Right.
But the fascinating studies are that this is manipulatable too. In other words, when you do these interventions where, let's say, that you read about free will or a famous passage from Francis Crick's book, The Astonishing Hypothesis, he was a hardcore determinist, is one manipulation where you have people read that your brain is just meat, your thoughts and your concerns are all just electric activity, is supposed to increase your deterministic beliefs. Well, when they use manipulations like that, what they find is that people get more punitive the more free will is primed.
Of course.
Here's a clever way to study this. They survey students before and after they take a cognitive neuroscience course. Over the course of the semester, you're learning all about the brain and all the stuff that we talk about, whatever. They did one of the studies that was done by this research group is by Sharif is the lead author, Free Will and Punishment.
He don't like it.
Yeah. When you have people
Sharif don't like it.
when you survey people before and after their neuroscience class, and then you give them a chance to do a mock prison trial thing. That is, you read about a trial of a moral offender, like a murderer, and you ask, what should the sentence be? What they found was that the people who took the neuroscience course relative to those who took a geography course became more punitive towards the offender. In other words, they recommended a harsher sentence. So there's a trend there that your belief about free will, even though, like I said, these other studies might show that you know deterministic things might provoke shady behavior, it also makes you more vindictive for the reason that is obvious, is that you hold people more responsible for what they do.
Yeah.
So you might think, well, what's wrong with that? It correlates with things like anti-distribution policies or common good type support, cutting welfare payments and things like that is when you prime people with the notion that you could have done otherwise. It makes them more, well, that person shouldn't have done that then.
It's their own fault.
So we need to not support those
people. They should not have been born black.
Almost all of the arguments I hear on that side are ultimately come down to responsibility, to this notion of responsibility. And responsibility is important. But it is something that is trained, just like anything else. And the notion seems to be that if we were to create programs to help people, we would somehow be reducing people's responsibility.
Well, think about the implications of Millie's argument. If the scientists shouldn't go around talking about determinism because it makes people more moral, so should we prevent people from taking cognitive neuroscience classes because they'll actually be exposed to the fact that the brain is
absolutely
a piece of meat?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's absurd that you should argue that you should restrict – because of the implications of something, you should restrict their knowledge about that.
When people know more, issues get more complicated. There's more gray area.
Everything's
not just black and white, and that makes life
more difficult. That is, a neuroscience course doesn't involve researchers ginning up the deterministic implications.
Yeah.
It just has them learning about the brain's activity.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of his arguments presuppose that there's the direction goes from learning about free will to then making up your mind about the moral responsibility question. That is, people have choices, therefore they're responsible, or people don't have choice, they're determined, so therefore they're not responsible. But there's a study that came out, a series of studies, the lead author's name is Clark, that shows that the directionality also goes the other way as well, and that is that the first you have the desire to hold people morally responsible, and that influences your views of free will.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, part of the effect is first you say, oh, that was a crime or that was a transgressor. That person needs to pay for it. That formulates your view about whether how much choice somebody has in the behavior after the effect.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is, when you're exposed to immoral behavior as opposed to something that doesn't have any moral relevance, it increases your sense that people freely chose that behavior. So in other words, if it's a moral act like so-and-so is on the way home and he gets into a car accident, if the person had preceded that story with and he cheated on his wife and went home and got into the car accident, people are more likely to be punitive and saying, well, he deserved that.
We saw this is even true of inanimate objects.
You
can perceive a robot as having free will if it did something to piss you off.
The series of studies by Clark showed that one of the manipulations was students in a course received an email informing them that there was an ostensible cheating classroom incident where somebody had cheated on the test. And then they measured these people's free will beliefs. And compared to the condition where they weren't informed of cheating, those who heard that other people had cheated in class became more free-willy afterwards. In other words, they became more – that hearing about an act of immorality made them shift in a free-will direction. Again, the rationale being that people ought to be held responsible if I've just heard about this immoral action occurring. We often hear a lot of this crap about, well, atheists and determinists and materialists want to believe that their behavior – is caused so they can run wild and be immoral and do all kinds of things to justify their lack of control. Well, that cuts both ways. People want to believe in free will if they have a sense of punitiveness about them. The other people ought to be
punished. If they're very vindictive and harsh individuals.
Hold on one second, though. I have a problem with the very basis of this study because what you're doing is you are priming people with something and seeing how their responses change as a result.
Yes.
Is that not determinism? I mean, that's exactly it. It's saying that these are not uncaused choices.
I always say that. I think I mentioned this before. I always say to my psych class, if you have a problem with determinism, why are you in this classroom studying psychology?
Right.
It's a law of human behavior. If you believe that your choice can opt you out of the causal chain, that yes, okay, influences can occur, but the person can then choose to decide independent of that and opt out of that. Why study
that,
science?
Even William James, way back in the 1800s, who hated determinism, was like, psychology is going to have to accept some of this as its assumptions, because otherwise what would we make of our results? I mean, I think the response is sometimes, well, it's not like 100% of people do the same thing under manipulation. Yeah, but if we're going to make anything out of the numbers, if we're going to make any kind of generalizations about what just happened after experimental manipulation, it's either going to be, well, people just happen to do this, 60% of people just happen to do this. Or it's going to be there's some underlying phenomena that's behind it.
Well, I had a classroom argument one time where a person was objecting to the term determinism, and I said, what would you like to call this? And he said, how about influence? I acknowledge that people are influenced by their genes, by their context, or their brain activity. Yeah. But I don't like the term determinism because, again, it sounds determined as in they had no other choice to do
as
it.
In, yeah.
But that's not
that
what it means.
It's that predetermined thing, once again, that people get stuck on.
From atheists, we get a lot of pushback. They don't like determinism because physics is no longer deterministic. But again, that's kind of an irrelevant argument. I think that's semantics.
That gets you randomness.
If you want to call me Well, that there, if indeterminism is really true, even at the psychological level, then yes, it's randomness.
It doesn't give you choice.
And that's
it gives
not
you
freedom.
Randomness.
Yes.
But otherwise, I mean, the one way to look at it is those quantum effects that are indeterminate on a very small level, they do not typically boil up to the point where they're going to affect our cognition,
our decision making.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that would be equally an argument against saying I can't raise my arm right now. Quantum effects might screw up my nervous system and make it so that my arm doesn't move.
Jeremy is waving his arm.
Or I no longer play billiards or something.
Well, another area of the objections that people have often to the deterministic thing is the subjective sense that they are making a choice. There's another study that I want to talk about that's interesting because it's in the area of what's called in psychology of embodied cognition. It's sort of all the rage now. What that simply means is that your physical state, being a physical being, affects your perception of the world. So for some of these studies are sort of pop psych famous, like if you hold a warm cup of coffee, you make more positive judgments than if you hold an ice cold drink.
Yep.
Or that when you have people hold a pencil in their teeth to make themselves smile, they report their mood is better than if they hold it with their lips and they're not smiling, thereby showing that your physical state, posing in other words, or warm or temperature, affects your psychological condition unbeknownst to you. In other words, you don't know that you're being manipulated. But it also affects your opinion of determinism, free will, your bodily state. So this is a series of studies. The lead author's name was Ent, E-N-T. Called Embodied Free Will Beliefs, Your Effects of Physical States on Metaphysical Opinions, where just like I was saying, if they go through a list of physical conditions and then ask people about their opinion on free will and determinism, so things like epileptic people, if you've had a seizure or not, or a panic disorder, which is a psychological condition that comes on out of the blue where you suddenly become fearful that you're going to die or you have to escape, those people that have had those conditions have more deterministic views. And again, probably for obvious reasons that they're exposed to their body being essentially a product of neural activity.
Right.
When you have a seizure, you have symptoms coming on that are electrical storms in your brain. Or in another series of studies, they had people who just simply felt physical drive states. So they had to urinate or they were physically tired or they felt horny or things like that, that when people were in certain physical states that they felt a motivation to do those things, I'm hungry, I'm tired. Their free will beliefs were diminished as a result of those physical states. Because, again, if you're exposed to the fact that, I'm not operating 100% today because I worked a third shift.
Right.
Or things like that, that you're less likely to say, oh, I have a choice about my behavior. No, you don't.
Go to the grocery store hungry sometime and tell me you
or
have
hungover.
A choice about – or hungover, that too.
Oh, a greasy cheeseburger.
Yeah, right.
Or even dieters, people that are – and here's an interesting twist is that people who had been successfully dieting – were more likely to believe in free will because they've been exposed to – they successfully resisted their temptation.
Right.
Other people who unsuccessfully dieted, it's less of a belief in free will because they view themselves as correctly, I would argue, as being a product of their physical state. Mm-hmm. So this is these series of studies of embodied cognition would show that free will determinism is affected by your own in the moment of your own perception of being sort of in your body in the being driven by your brain.
That's why I find one of Mele's – another one of his objections so meaningless. He seems very triumphant about the fact that if you survey people – and you ask them, well, let's just pretend the mind is just the brain and there's no such thing as a soul. And then he gives them a scenario. He says if you give people a scenario, a man sees a $20 bill fall from a stranger's pocket and considers returning it and decides to keep it. If I ask whether he had free will when he made that decision, 73% answer yes. In a related condition involving a compliance drug, only 21% of participants say the person has free will at the time. Now, if these participants are playing along, we have evidence that a majority of English speakers do not see having a non-physical mind or soul as a requirement for free will. He knows, in other words, he can't – no matter how much money Templeton gives him, he's not going to be able to prove dualism correct. He wants compatibilism, what we would call some ability for freedom even in a deterministic universe. But he wants to call it free will. And he's using kind of public opinion to justify that. But at the same time, why do you bury that related condition where 21% say the person doesn't have free will if they've been given a drug? Mm-hmm. When you consider, you know, your biochemistry, it's essentially the same thing. To me, I don't get what victory he gets out of a public that's generally uninformed about this issue.
Yeah.
Saying,
because
well,
if they are informed,
of course
it's
I could,
a bad thing.
Of course I could still have free will and even if I didn't have a soul or an immaterial mind. I mean that maybe helps him a little bit against people who would say, well, we're all dualists in this culture. Okay, a lot of people who embrace free will don't base it on dualism explicitly in their minds. A lot of right. people just never even question the concept. But I don't see how this is somehow evidence for the free will proposition.
Why are they dualists? Oh, because they were raised that way.
If anything, it's ammunition for him to be allowed to redefine views that are essentially deterministic or compatibilistic under that label free will. He's engaged in a bait and switch, really.
He's accurate in that there are some studies that I that show that the folk conception of free will is more linked to the perception of choice than dualism. There's a study that came out this year by an author's name is Feldman called – the title is Free Will is About Choosing, which tells you everything you need to know about what the study found is that people's free will beliefs are linked to their notion of cognitively associating choice with freedom. That is, you're free to choose. You don't have a gun to your head, in other words.
Yeah.
They would say – you could have done otherwise, therefore that's free will. You weren't forced to do that action. But as we've – again, as we've talked about, the subjective notion of choosing or not is itself determined and sometimes an illusion.
Yeah, and also if we're going to claim negative effects from like lack of choice because you believe in determinism instead of free will, we've also seen other studies that suggest that's mostly a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah, so
here
the
in the West,
in the
where
West,
free will is so heavily emphasized, you are going to get those kind of things. But that could be nothing more than tracking a major cultural stereotype.
The study by Savani is what you're referring to, was they compared U.S. students with Indian students in India.
Oh, okay.
And what they found was is that sure enough that the exposing people to determinism made them less moral. If they were in the United States, it didn't have the same effect on the students in India.
Hmm.
Students in a collectivist culture like India, so this is things like, you know, a history of arranged marriages or
Hinduism also
or
suggests
villages.
A lot of determinism as well, does it not?
They're used to the notion that their choices are constrained and they don't see anything that doesn't freak them
and
out.
And that earlier decisions have an effect on your later decisions.
Yeah, or their sense of options are not, you know, this is my caste or this is what my family wants me to do, and that's perfectly natural. But the point is that, of course, these manipulations affect – in the United States offend our notion that is, oh, I'm just a piece of electric meat. I might as well go pillage and rape and, you know, whereas in a collectivist culture they would say, well, duh.
Yeah.
Of course my choices are constrained and I'm not a fully autonomous agent. Yeah. So
what? Of course you're one other thread in the fabric. So what?
If psychology researchers are out there, I'd be really interested in having studies look at the effect of, you know, just free will and the type of manipulations that we're talking about, but then also subdividing people who are were already, in essence, materialist determinists.
Yeah.
And seeing if those manipulations make them immoral, I'm banking that they don't.
Also, I think, which would be much more valuable than just saying, well, if you didn't have a mind, immaterial mind, would you still be free? I think is to maybe just ask specific questions about when they hold somebody morally responsible in a free will sense or not. I go over these as thought experiments with my class every semester. Grandma can't remember your name. She has Alzheimer's disease. Do we hold her morally responsible? No one says yes. Not a single person.
Yeah, see, the dualist interactionists would picture grandma inside of a little pod inside of her brain.
Little homunculus grandma.
Completely aware of what your name is, but
unable to click on the interface.
Which is absurd.
Or Johnny's insensitive to your feelings because he struggles with autism. Mm. Then what I get is a sudden incremental holding of responsibility. The students, well, we don't want to be mean to Johnny.
Yes.
But we do want to at least inform Johnny, all right, here's what you did in this situation, and that makes people upset. Mm-hmm. And as I go up the list, it's on the list, each incremental step up, the way you react to somebody has more of a causal effect on their future behavior. Mm-hmm. And the more your behavior could adjust them, the more – just instinctively people choose to hold the person responsible. And the converse, the less your reactions to them will have an effect, the more we're just willing to say, look, this is biology. It's out of my hands. So honestly, I think if Malay reproduced his studies and started asking the right kind of questions, I think we would find that even Americans are much more deterministic or compatibilist in their thinking than even what we really suppose.
And well, I would even suggest that there are some manipulations that you can do involve things that, Jeremy, you've talked about before, and that is like mindfulness meditation. Essentially, one of the effects of mindfulness is that it teaches that your emotions are not reality, or they're at least that they're the you that's you, your ego, is different from that. And so you notice, okay, I'm feeling this way. That's interesting. Or my thoughts are like angry monkeys, you know, and it teaches that your ego is separate from all the storm of thoughts and emotions that you're feeling.
You start to see your thoughts as reactions. It's not like, oh, I'm so pissed at her. It's like, whoa, that's weird. I just got really mad.
Or in the sense of evaluating someone else's behavior, it's the difference between that. It's unfortunate that person's unenlightened, or as opposed to bad.
I say that
bad,
to myself all the time.
Let's go punish
that person. So sad that they are not as enlightened as me. And same for Melee. Maybe we can give that to him. I mean, he's just not. No, actually, to be honest, I haven't read his full book, and I do want to say I want to give this guy's argument a chance and look at it in more depth. It's just what I'm seeing so far from him seems to be motivated and playing fast and loose. So I'm a little bit skeptical.
Not worth $4 million.
Another related notion to the notion of responsibility is this notion that when somebody is immoral, that rather than a behavior, it reflects some sort of inherent dispositional quality of evil.
Yeah.
Right.
And so that some of the same researchers that we've talked about here, like Roy Bimester from Florida, he had a book out a few years ago called Evil, where what does it mean when we categorize somebody's behavior as being a constitutional dispositional evil? And religion, I think one of the negative effects of certain strains of religion, particularly fundamentalist ones, is that it promotes that notion of people's behavior as being, at some extremes, demonic or satanic. But even just simply that person's evil, that has damaging effects. There was a study that came out this year, the author's name was Davis, called Relational Spirituality and Forgiveness, How Your Appraisals May Hinder Forgiveness. Some of the research on forgiveness, I think I've talked about this on the show before, shows a really tenuous or not as strong relationship with being religious. That is, religious and spiritual people as a trait don't necessarily – they're not more forgiving than others despite the doctrines. Why is that the case? One of the findings is that that religion might promote some of these things like, you know, turn the other cheek, and it has doctrines like that, but it coexists with another strain of religion of an evil attribution. That is, when somebody's like that, it's about them as a person. They're an evil person. First, they had a scale sort of developed as to what does that mean when the offender is evil, tended to dehumanize that person, so like a demonic thing, or that they're not, you know, as human as me, but also a dissimilarity attribution. That is, this person and I are not alike, or those people, that group of people are evil because they're subhuman. That's what they mean by evil. And it showed that, you know, like I was saying, that religious and spirituality contains a strain that if to the extent that the person views the other offender not as simply, you know, unfortunate behavior or that they're acting like that way, but they're evil.
Or a conditioned thing that we might be able to change.
Yeah.
Right.
If they viewed them as evil, they were less forgiving of that person. So one of the answers to this – one of the, I think, negative strains of religion that's damaging is this notion that somebody is sinful because of a quality of themselves or even, like I said, like, you know, a lot of Pentecostals view possession as being very real, that you have an – you're not just an alcoholic behavior or that you're drinking too much. It's – you're dealing with alcohol spirits or demons or the, not just the spirits but or like your depression demon. They personify it as an actual entity, which, you know – the problem with that, though, is that you, again, you view that as a quality that's not just a behavior but an aspect that's a disposition, and it leads you to view the person as less human.
In a strange way, they tend to be more fatalist than the determinists
in
this
room. Very much so.
Because determinism implies, at least for some things, we can condition in the other direction. And this is more like, well, if they're demon-filled, what do you do about that other than cast out the demon,
purge the evil? We talked in the show before about the problems between – like with, let's say, CRC doctrine, and that some of the contradictions between this strong emphasis on free will, responsibility for punishment, with predestination,
or that
things are. But what does it mean to say fight for free will? You have choice, so I can hold you accountable. But then say God willed it, or God wills events to happen. So does the determinism get pushed from you to God?
So
he's tempting you. He's
religious people, I mean, they're going to have different views on this. You have religious determinists or theological determinists is what they'd say. You know, the Calvinist, you know, the Reformed tradition.
Some view the sovereignty of God actually depends on determinism.
Yeah.
It's a form of external determinism. Yeah. So I'm living in a world where God tempts me or tries me or does things
to me. It's not that causal.
I can't control.
Yeah.
The reason I've always heard, Justin probably could answer this better, but is just kind of the answer is it's both. It's it's one of those mysteries. Yeah, you have a responsibility and you couldn't have done otherwise.
But like the simplistic – this is –
that's essentially what I was taught.
I don't mean this to sound glib, but like when Pharaoh's heart was hardened, did God harden his heart? Yeah. When Judas had a spirit enter him that made him betray Christ, was that his choice?
Both. That's what I've heard. Yeah. It's both. Pharaoh hardened his heart and God
– it was forced
When Saul's depressed and throws his harp at David or whatever, what tries to mess with David, it has some textual things in there that God made Saul that way, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So he didn't have free will.
It's almost like there's intellectual inconsistencies with people who believe the Bible.
Paul addresses this very briefly. His response is essentially, who the hell are you?
Wasn't that God's response to Job?
Yeah.
That was the answer Job got.
It's pretty much really cruel skeptical theism is what that boils down to.
What if God decided to raise Pharaoh up just to be a vessel for destruction?
And his answer is,
who are you to ask what God purpose God has?
Of course, the true reason he caused Pharaoh's heart to harden was that so we could get the Exodus movie. What is it?
Woo-hoo!
Exodus, Gods and Kings? Yeah. Maybe we'll talk about the Exodus movie on another
episode. I'm definitely going to go see it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm excited to see it.
I'm so on board. White people playing Egyptians? Come on.
Doesn't Moses sound a lot like Batman?
Weirdly.
Really cover that. Let my people go.
Accent.
Here come the frogs. Every episode. See my staff? It's a snake now.
And Pharaoh's all like, take control of your people, Moses.